Our next speaker will be Mr. Jim Rickenbacker. He's our webmaster. And he's going to talk a little bit more about DNA, correlating why DNA results with genealogy.
Okay. All right. Why DNA and genealogy? Why do we do why DNA tests? Well, why DNA testing can answer a common question that we often have, and that's simply, are two males with the same surname descended from a common paternal ancestor? Which within genealogical within genealogical time.
We can't hear you back here.
Pardon?
We can't hear you.
Okay. Are two males of the same surname descended from a common paternal ancestor within genealogical time? And when we do this testing, there are some caveats. But first, let's look at why DNA testing does. You've already seen this chart. But why DNA tests the paternal line, which is you, your father, your grandfather, great-grandfather, and so this is the surname line. So often this is called surname testing. When we do the test, we test 12 of over 100 genetic markers. And you'll hear these sometimes called short tandem repeat mutations. Initially, this is usually 12 markers because YDNA testing is pretty expensive. Most people, you couldn't really afford to test more markers. Unfortunately, 12 markers are not really very useful. And you know, if you get tested for YDNA, the first thing you notice that starts coming back is multiple 12 marker matches. Most of them are not your surname, and frankly, you're not related to most of them. It's sort of random matches. 37 markers now are the minimum currently recommended. I think that's the minimum family tree offers now. And that's a good rate for the sort of things that you want to do. For special cases where you want to see if there's some surname activity going on in the line, 67 markers are up are useful. When you get your report, it's going to look something like this. You're going to get a name out here. You're going to get a kit number, and then the markers of the test that have been listed along the top. And then each one of these numbers is the number of short tandem repeats for that marker. And those numbers are what you're looking at. These same numbers of repeats that pass intact from father to son, usually. Except at each birth event, each time there's a birth event in the family, there's a very small probability. Very, very small. But one or more of these numbers can change. And how small is it? Well, for each one of these, let's say for 393, it's about 1 in 300. There's about one chance in 300 that number will change in the birth event. You've got 37 markers, so it ends up with about one chance in 8 at each birth. One of these numbers will change. So, it is a very small probability. Fewer changes than a close to genetic relationship. Now, there's one of the cautions here. A close to genetic relationship implies, but does not necessarily mean a close to genealogical relationship. I'm going to show you something in a minute. We're going to see how this works with some real data. Here's the surname project data. I'm not going to tell you what the surname is yet. And with the names, I've sort of hidden the
lines, but I've identified three lines here, and they're called Johannes, Nicholas, and Henry. And the individuals in these lines were tested, and we've got three sets, three differences. We've got differences at marker 390, we've got differences at marker 385B, and we've got differences at marker CUIA. Johannes and Nicholas was three marker difference. Nicholas to Henry was a two marker difference. Henry to Johannes was the one marker difference. What does it mean? Do I have a match? Don't I have a match? The answer is yes, we have a match. This is a pretty good indication that all of these are related to a common ancestor. But how? Well, one of the tools the family tree DNA offers is what they call a tip report. So let's look at a tip report. And I think, you know, first time you click on a tip report, you look at, whoa, what's this mean? And, you know, it basically tells you, okay, comparing Y DNA, 37 markers, the probability, oops, back here. Okay. The probability that these two numbers, two tests share a common ancestor over the last 4 generations is 11%, 8 generations is 46, 12 is 75. Wow. What does it mean? Well, here's what it means. Family tree DNA tip report tells you the common, the cumulative probability that a common ancestor would be found within so many generations. Okay? And here's what's important to remember. If you have a common, if two people have a common paternal ancestor, that's a fact. It's not a probability, it's a fact. And it's just one instance of the many probabilities that could have generated the test result. You've got to remember that when you interpret the results. Here's another way of looking at it. This curve is just simply the numbers that family tree DNA gives you. Now, here's your 11% for the four markers, and so on up until you get out here to 24, it's almost 100%. What that means is it's an almost certainty that you have a common ancestor somewhere over here. You say, well, okay, good. What else can I tell? Well, if we break it down by generation, which is how the numbers were actually created, it looks like this. There's maybe a 4% probability that there's a common ancestor in generation 2, 5%, maybe 7, and so on. So, this is what it's going to look like. Think about it this way. If I went into the test and I said, give me 100 results that have the same exact mismatch, and magically I've known where the common ancestor existed. So I've got 100, let's say they're markers, and I'm going to drop them in them, representing the number of generations back that this common ancestor existed. It's going to generate something that looks like this chart. Thing is, that common ancestor is just one of those. So where is it? I'm hearing the answers because you can't tell.
We can't have.
Well, I start. I'll keep trying to talk louder. All right. Where's that common ancestor? You need to add some genealogy. Let me add some genealogy here. In this case, we have a known common ancestor of 11 and a half generations. right? I keep doing that. Right here. There is a known common ancestor. Let's look at the genealogy. Here's an actual lineage chart for these two tests. Now you may begin to get an idea of what sort of certain test this is. This is Rickenbacker. This is Rickenbacker. Going back to Michael Rickenbacker on about 1550 in Zeglin, Switzerland. And descended from Michael, we have two immigrants that came to the United States, both state migrant. They were second cousins once removed. Right here is our Heinrich. He came to South Carolina with his wife or child in 1735. Here's the second one. He went to Pennsylvania, arrived with a wife and six children in 1740, having two children die in the war. Now, the interesting thing is, these descendants essentially remain in Pennsylvania. These descendants, of course, remain in South Carolina. So we have two nice lineages here. The other thing is, both of these lines are well documented. Well documented in Switzerland, well documented in Pennsylvania, and well documented in South Carolina. My DNA shows three men, mismatches, have a proven common paternal ancestor 11 and a half generations back. The DNA. It's nice to know that the DNA confirms what we know about the genealogy. Okay, let's add some information. Let's add the third test here. This is the one I wanted to show you. Okay. Here the black line. This is Johannes and Nicholas. This is the one we've been looking at. Henry to Nicholas is the red line. This is the two mismatches. And then Johannes to Henry is the blue line. This is one mismatch. Now, can we put Henry in the Johannes line, which is in Pennsylvania, or do we put him in the Nicholas line, which is in South Carolina? Well, that's sure a close match to Johannes. You can't tell. You can't tell. One of the things family tree DNA do is they will let you restrict this. It will let you restrict the test. And to do that, we have to add some genealogy. One fact that we know for certain from the genealogy that we know is that Henry does not have a common paternal ancestor with Johannes or Nicholas within five generations. That we know for certain. So family tree DNA will be restricted. And when we do, it looks like this. And now we see, the relationship between Henry and Johannes and between Henry and Nicholas now looks a lot more similar. And so now you can see why you really can't tell which line Henry belongs to. Not from DNA testing. Well, once again, you have to go to genealogy. Okay, now we put Henry's lineage in, what we know. Henry was born in 1811, he died in 1896, is buried over by Cameron at Jericho Church. He's definitely a part of this group in DNA. So he certainly belongs here somewhere. The question is where. There's no known link to Pennsylvania. And in fact, you know, on the Pennsylvania side, there's no known people that migrated to South Carolina either. At least not back in this time frame. So the question is, okay, if he's in this line, where does he belong? Can we find anywhere to see him? And the answer is, yeah, we have several possible locations. You don't have to descend to the, well, he's the son of an unknown somebody. There are actually some known people that might possibly be his father. Let's look at them. One possibility. Now, this is possible. Not probable. Possible. And this is not definite, so I don't see this showing up on the website. But possible father. Nicholas I had a son called Henry. Henry was born in 1784. He died in 1816. He had a wife and two daughters in the 1810 census. So here we have a man, an old Rickenbacker. He had a wife. He was growing a family. Henry was born in 1811. This Henry died in 1816. And we can find no further information on his family whatsoever. It's like they totally disappeared. Which, looking at the time, you know what the censuses are like in 1810 and 1820, if the wife and the rest of the family survive, maybe the wife remarried, pretty simple that he could disappear. All these families could disappear. That's one possibility. I think it's probably the highest possibility, but once again, we can't prove it. Jacob. He was the second son of Nicholas I. He was born in about 1787, died 1814, had a wife in the 1810 census. Once again, we don't know anything further about this family, just that he existed in the right general locations. The other possibilities, we think Nicholas I had a couple of other sons that could be a father. There's a couple of possibilities from the other sons and findings, but there's no records of them. You can't find any records of them anywhere. So anyhow, so what have we learned from all of this? We've learned that Henry definitely belongs here. That is for DNA. That's the significant learning. Because before DNA, there was always the question, where did Henry come from? DNA tells us he definitely came from his line. Now, all we have to do is we measure the genealogy and prove where in his line comes from. Okay, summarize a little bit. Why DNA testing can answer the common genealogical question, are two males of the same surname descended from a common paternal ancestor? And that it can do. What it cannot do is it can't reliably predict the number of generations back to that common ancestor. So that. For that, you have to have genealogy. Okay, now I'm going to finish up just a little bit more. I want to talk about the Rickenbacker DNA Project. This is the Rickenbacker Surname DNA Project. I started it a year or so ago to compare the results of the Nicholas II line and the related Pennsylvania line where we have a known common paternal ancestor. And that, as you can see, we've done. Thankfully, the DNA testing has sort of proving up what we do from June down. In addition, I wanted to test the possibility of a common paternal ancestor for the four known early Rickenbacker lines in Orangeburg. This is Nicholas II, 1784 to 1851. As you saw, this is the one where we do have the lineage all the way back to Switzerland. There's Reuben. Reuben Rickenbacker was born in 1796. We don't know exactly when he died. We do know that he had two children, at least two children. This is the family that some, at least his sons, some sources mention as Black Rickenbackers, which is probably a little bit of a disservice to this family. In that, Reuben himself, we know, was of mixed ancestry, and throughout the years, both his children and their children, as far as associations, were always associated with white churches and were always associated with the white community. So, we're sort of interested in this is an interesting family if you'd like to learn more about. The Hendrick family, we discussed this morning. We know now that we can tie him in with Nicholas II back to Switzerland. And then there's the Henry Lewis Rickenbacker family. Henry was born in 1896, in 1897. And Henry is actually my mother's stepfather's grandfather. So Henry Lewis is my step great-great-grandfather. These are the lines that we're looking at. Rickenbacker certainly the UMA project. We've done a fair amount of testing. I've told you a little bit about Henry. Probably we'll have some newsletter article or maybe a talk next year on some of these. We've got one test from the Reuben line that really looking at somebody from the Barnabas line to test. And with that, I'll ask if there are any questions.
I just want to say that we've got Rickenbackers in Colleton County around Roundo, and you look exactly like them.
But that's a fact, right?
That's the DNA.
Okay. One thing I found to fill the line going back up two generations, when our great grandfathers had a brother, and that brother migrated to Indiana. And we got a line up there in the Felders. It's Abraham Felder, Dr. Abraham Felder. So we got a line going back to the line. Don't have no DNA testing, genealogy wise.
Okay, that's good. Other questions? Okay. Thank you.